You're listening to the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast with John Rabin. Okay, all right. It's the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast. I'm John Rabin. Thank you for joining me once again. This is episode 144. Hope you're doing all right. It's a beautiful day here in Austin, Texas. At least when I'm recording this. Watch me post this and it comes up and you listen to it. And, oh, it's a beautiful day and it's just hell outside. But currently it's beautiful. So, you know, we're approaching what will probably be a brutal summer. I just feel it. It's like, I don't know. We had a winter, like a once in a hundred years winter storm. I'm sure you heard about it in the news. So I just don't see going from that kind of a winter to it's a mild summer. It's fine. It's just mild. No big deal. I just don't see that. But at least right now, it's nice. Hope everybody's doing all right. With things opening up and people's perception of, I'm going to go out and do what I want, I hope that you're still being safe. I hope that you are staying sober if you're a sober person. Or if you're not a sober person, as I always say, I hope you're staying sane. Hope you're not losing your goddamn mind. Hope it's doing all right. I'm watching my cat attempt to clean her neck. And I don't know if you've ever seen a cat attempt to lick its own neck before, but it's almost hypnotic. That's my cat I've had for forever, Sid. And then we have the other cat, Q-Tip, who is a maniac. And I may have mentioned before on the podcast, I know I have, it's been months. He's wily, and he, like, very athletic, very, like, too much, can't be controlled, energy-wise. And the only thing that we can do to get him to calm down is to, like, it's because we put our foot down. It's like, look, I'm not feeding you 30 minutes early. I don't care how much of a dick you're being. So the only thing we've figured out that works is he's got a Hawaiian shirt. It's a Hawaiian cat shirt or a cat Hawaiian shirt. Hawaiian shirt for cats. There you go. And so we'll put it on him. And then, as soon as we get him, so we have to pretend like he's going to get a treat. So he comes to the kitchen and then we go, ha, got you again. We put the Hawaiian shirt on him and he immediately becomes this weird, needy, docile thing where he just likes to lean up all, you know, he won't get off you. Like he just comes up. So he calms down, but then he's all up in your face and he's always there. So it's like, is this better? So you have to get used to that. So there's no in between. He's either out of his mind or just like, I'm going to be right on top of you. Please pet me. I'm going to purr. So we just tried this. I bring this up because we decided that, because when he's wily and running around, he likes to harass the other cat because I think he enjoys her hissing at him. Like it just is like, yeah, like, I'm not touching you. Like, runs around and then she gets pissed off because she's cranky, like me. And she just, so we figured out, let's try the water gun. Let's, like, a squirt gun type of thing, you know, so we can, you know, squirt him with water and maybe this will help calm him down. No. We have bought some water guns because, you know, why not? And we've tried them, and he is unfazed by water. He thinks it's part of the game. He actually enjoys it. Like, he doesn't run away. I mean, he kind of runs away, but it's not like, oh my God, I got wet. He really looks at you like, thanks, man. I really needed a bath. This is actually kind of cool. I like this. I'll clean that off later. No big deal. Anyway, back to what I was doing. Just completely ignores it. So it's a huge backfire. I know it may work for some cats, but it doesn't work for mine. I have no idea. I'm out of ideas with him. Other than maybe I'll buy some more shirts so that they're not all Hawaiian. Maybe I'll like get a bowling shirt. He'll have a better wardrobe than me, since all my wardrobe is used to be black clothes, but have slightly faded. So it's darker than gray, lighter than black wardrobe. That's me. I actually looked at myself in the mirror and realized that the pandemic has kind of changed my wardrobe, because I shave my head now and I wear this kind of flat military style kind of cap, and then I'm all black, and I look at myself and I look like somebody who uses the phrase mainstream media in every conversation. That's who I look like. I'm comfortable with it, but I realize I'm like, this is exactly, this is where I'm at apparently. Good for me. Oh, so there's something that happened this week that doesn't mean anything, but it's interesting to talk about, I think. Like, I didn't comment on it online because I believe I've told you guys that I'm done with the whole trying to make points on social media. I don't comment. If I have something to add, if I see a post, which you really... Like, I have to accidentally see things. Like, when I'm going to social media to either promote the podcast or do something like that, then I'll see something. But I don't go looking for it. So, Sorry. Water. Water is good. So, I accidentally saw this, right? And it's this fluff piece done by a local news station. And they've got this series... of like videos and like articles written promoting Austin as a boom town. And so they decided to do a quick one on stand-up comedy, because there's been shows I'm doing with parentheses, quotations with my fingers. There's been shows going on during the pandemic in random places. Of two different kinds of qualities. On one side, you've got high quality, high testing, everyone wear a mask, limited capacity, run by, funded by Dave Chappelle and Joe Rogan at Stubbs Amphitheater. That's on one end. And on the other end, you've got random yahoos in a bar with poor ventilation. It's like, hey, we're all wearing masks. That should be fine. All right. So there's those kind of things. So this article comes out and it's highly uninformed. They talk to just a couple of random jackasses. It doesn't matter. They're just guys who, I think one guy had been doing comedy 3 whole years. And the other guy I've, never met or heard of. Not that I'm, Joe Comedy of this city, but I have been here a fucking long time. So, and so they made their quotes and their opinions, and it just threw everybody in a fucking tizzy, because it was just like, this is not a good representation of the past. Talking about how Austin is going to become like a comedy mecca. They keep using that word. I'm like, I don't know. You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. But and they're really, what they're doing is they're just quoting what they've heard Joe Rogan say. Rogan, of course, moved here as strategic, because you don't pay state tax here. California's a shit show, and he views this place as a great place to have lots of comedians, lots of comedy here, good comedy clubs. It's, you know, it's right in the middle of the country, you know, from the east and the west coast and like going up. So it's a, you know, it's a good location, you know, just to get away from Hollywood for people who want to do stand up, who don't give a shit about Hollywood, just to get away from the LA types, which is, now there's good and bad to that. The good is, you know, it brings in, you know, a bunch of different people who, you know, are named people that, that people know in comedy have moved here. But it also brings a bunch of people who want to get in with every, with the named comics. So you get a bunch of, you know, so you get a bunch of mediocre comics moving here. You get a bunch of terrible, like it just, you know, it makes it bigger. And there's positives and negatives to that. So it's a, but the article, I'm getting off point, the off track. The article is basically kind of dismissing as, you know, almost implied that their comedy wasn't really big here before the pandemic. And it kind of dismissed all of history. And it didn't make me mad because it's a fluff piece that nobody would have seen had people not been outraged and posted. And that's the thing that really kind of makes me laugh all the time when people get outraged about things. Is the best way for something terrible, whether it be a form of entertainment, a kind of like a movie or an album or something that's made, or TV show, or even stuff like this, or a poorly written column, poorly written article, the best way to squash something like that is to dismiss it. When you're dismissive of something and ignore it, that's how things go away, because it doesn't pick up any kind of traction. When you're outraged about it and you start sharing, you know, have you fucking seen this? No, let me look at it. And then more people share it. And then all of a sudden, all these people who would have never seen this poorly written thing are now seeing it because you were bored that day and decided to complain about it. And that's kind of funny to me. I'm like, aren't you talking about it right now? I am, but I wanted to bring up a point about it, which is that people do this all the time. They forget the past really quickly. It's just what happens. And I'll give you a really good example. I saw an article that claimed with, you know, their evidence, and they wrote it out that they thought that 2016 could have been the best year for music. That's what they said. And as time goes by, it makes that less and less true and less likely. I don't know if there's anybody listening to this who would immediately go, yeah, you know what? 2016 was the best year for music. I don't think so. I don't even know if the person who wrote that believes that now in 2021. Like thinking back going, I don't know. I don't think so. Because when I think of it, like if you ask me, my immediate gut reaction is to tell you that 1994 was the best year in music. That's the first reaction, and that's just because, you know, that's where I grew up. You know, that's, I'm a grunge kid, you know, I was 21, turned 21 that year, but like, you know, you think of 94 and I'll run down, you know, history. I'll let you know. I'll be like, no, that's when, you know, that's Downward Spiral from Nine Inch Nails, Green Day, Dookie, Soundgarden's Super Unknown. Let me see. I wrote cheat notes. Oasis, definitely, maybe. I hate Oasis, but it was still a big album. Ill Communication by the Beastie Boys. Nas, Illmatic came out that. That was MTV Unplugged, Nirvana. Pearl Jam, Vitality. It's just all these. Beck, Mellow Gold. Notorious B.I.G., Ready to Die came out. I mean, Warren G., came in, Portishead, Dummy, Jesus Christ, yeah, there was just all this, these things that came out, you know, far beyond Driven by Pantera came out that year. Boys to Men's second album. Like, 94 was big. But honestly, and I'm going to read it. I know, I'm sorry, but I have to. But really, if you look, truthfully, in rock, in the rock and roll age, 1977 is the best year. 77 is without a doubt the best year in music, because I mean, that was Rumors by Fleetwood Mac, Sex Pistols, Aha, Aja, the Steely Dan album, Rocket to Russia by the Ramones, My Aim is True, Elvis Costello, David Bowie released two albums, The Talking Heads' first album, Lust for Life, Iggy Pop, you know, Pink Floyd Animals, The Clash self-titled album, you know, Exodus, Bob Marley, Damned, News of the World, Queen, The Stranger by Billy Joel, Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf. You know, I mean, Jesus Christ, Out of the Blue, Electric Light, ELO, almost read that out. I mean, Thin Lizzy, Bad Reputation. If you like Kiss, Love Gun came out that year, if that's your thing. You know, it's just, Let There Be Rock, AC/DC came out. Like, there's, 1977 is just fucking crazy. So that's what I would say. But if you Google, like, greatest year of music, there's a huge, long article that argues that 1876 is actually the greatest year in music, in terms of, like Mahler's first significant composition, Brahms' first symphony, Dvorak and Tchaikovsky and Wagner. Like, people, you know, I remember 1876. Nobody remembers 1876, clearly, but yeah, so it's like that. You know, I actually read that. I'm like, you know what? I'll give this a shot. And I read it and I went, Jesus Christ, 1876 was a really significant year in music. My point is that what you feel to be true will eventually be forgotten and ignored as younger people show up and go, clearly, we're the best. This is the best. I know from my 18 years of experience of being alive that this is the best. Like, it's, yeah, it's going to happen. People, you know, people forget everything. And as for my fellow comedians in this city who feel like they're like, oh shit, it's going to be big when things really open up in this city, where it's going to be like the comedy city in the country. You know, and there's going to be a lot of comedy clubs that are working on, you know, from smaller rooms to bigger rooms. Joe Rogan's going to open up his own club. Cap City Comedy Club's opening up back up north. And then, like, there's a bunch of little tiny bar shows already starting right now. I know I'm going to get back in there sometime, you know, after May 1st. Once I get my vaccine situation all taken care of, you know, then I'll be selectively going back out and doing comedy again. But what do I think? I think this, I think comedians here are more excited about doing comedy than regular people are about seeing comedy. Because I've already talked to a few people who are more angry about losing their club that they used to go see live music to that shut down, being replaced by another, being replaced by comedy clubs. They're more angry about losing their music venue than they are excited about seeing comedy again. I feel like people have been performed at through their phone and through their TV for an entire year. They've had people talk at them, whether it be comedians, politicians, TV shows, movies, people on YouTube talking about really grisly murders while doing makeup. Like, they've seen this. They've had people talk at them for a year. And they're tired. They want to go out. They want to flirt. They want to interact with other people. They want to get drunk. They want to listen to music. They want to try to get laid. This is, you know, they're not going to go, hey, let's go out for the first time ever and sit there and have somebody talk to us while we remain silent for at least 30 minutes to maybe an hour. I don't think that they're going to do this. I think the comedy clubs will do all right, depending on the bookings. But I think these bar shows that they're all like, man, it's going to get big. Comedy's going to be huge here. I think these bar shows are going to be replaced by drunk trivia night and cornhole tournaments. That's what I really think. I think people would rather listen to music and play stupid games that make no sense so that they can interact with people that they haven't seen face to face in 13 months. That's what I think. I mean, there will be some people going to comedy shows, but overall, this whole, like, yeah, it's going to be huge. It's going to be all right. I'm excited to see what happens, but this overreaction to both what's going to happen and the past, the whole, you know, being too nostalgic or, you know, show the past some respect. It's just, remember that it's just a blur written on the internet that people will forget by the time this podcast episode posts. I think people who actually hear that, they go, oh yeah, you just reminded me about that. I completely forgot about that. Yeah, anyway, that's what I think. Don't get me wrong, I am excited about performing. I'm also curious as to what kind of material people have been preparing. Just to watch at mics and shows, you know. I have 30 minutes on Netflix and my cat. Great. Pandemic material. This ought to be great. This ought to be really good. Here's my comedy special I wrote all about the inside walls of my bedroom. I don't know. Who knows? Mentioned Rogan earlier. I watched on Rogan's podcast, he had Demi Lovato on, who has a new YouTube series out about her things about her life and her addiction and her OD and all this other stuff, which I did not watch, but I did listen to the interview with Rogan. And, there was a couple of things I wanted to touch on, because she talks about how she is California sober, is what it's called, which is basically sober except for weed. Now, I've talked about that several times, about how it does work for some people. And how it was my opinion, and I still believe this, that if you have any doubts about whether or not it will work, it probably won't. And of course, you know, they talked about how, you know, the whole gateway drug thing is kind of bullshit, and how my opinion on that is that I don't think weed is a gateway drug. I think that if you can be, however, so far gone in your addiction that weed does not do anything for you but trigger you back into doing the drugs you'd rather be doing than weed. And that's based off of me. Now, everybody's different, but I think I've seen people do that more often than I've seen people be successful with weed. But I've seen people be successful with weed and stay clean. Now, it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm rooting for Demi Lovato. I'm rooting for her. But she's, you know, she relapsed a couple of years ago. And I think this is where, so now she's trying weed, because her point, and it's a decent point, which is that there's got to be this middle, like a more reasonable middle path with recovery than just complete abstinence, which is real funny because sounds very, you know, Buddhism-esque about, oh, the middle way. Is there a middle way with recovery? And I don't know, you know, I hope that, granted, if things don't go well, continue to go well for her in the future, she's not going to be like making, she's not going to make that public. So it's not going to be a curiosity, you know, let's see if her experiment works and let's keep track and keep score. But a little bit of me is kind of like that. It's like, I want to see this be, I want to see if it works for her. I want to see her be successful. I know it doesn't work for me, but I wonder if it's going to be good encouragement for other people, because there has to be some way to evolve recovery further. Now, I've seen recovery being, taken to new spots from, you know, from the traditional 12-step, you know, program that's 90 years old. I've seen people, you know, with doing, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, like there is an evolution in different recovery programs, and it just would be interesting to see. Now, another thing that they talked about was, because, and you know, Rogan brought this up, which was all like about being powerless, and about how, you know, he didn't like that, and like, I don't believe that, and all this other stuff. Now, he's not in recovery, doesn't have an addiction issue. And a lot of people from the outside, when you look at that, you're like, if you're truly powerless, and I get it, because if you're truly powerless, there's no reason to try, because nothing is going to work. You know, technically, if you're powerless, you won't be able to do anything. Thank you. Yes, that's correct. Technically, that's true. But, so are you actually powerless? No. Why is that important? Because it's a psychology thing. The whole idea is, in the current state, you can't do anything about it. So you recognize that you are currently, at this moment, powerless. And by recognizing it and then getting assistance from this recovery program, then you're able, with the help and the following the steps, you're able to get to a spot that you're able to overcome it, and you are no longer powerless. Although people will continue to say, no, without this program, I'm powerless. And that's not technically fucking true. It's almost like you're tricking. The idea is, the program works because it tricks you into thinking that because you're powerless, you can use the program and you're no longer powerless, when in fact you've never been powerless. You just have a thinking problem that you need to overcome. You know what I mean? And that's why it didn't work for me, was because I thought it was too smart and I realized what the program was doing. I was like, I get what you're doing. You're trying to convince me to do a thing, so then it works. Well, I'm not falling for it, which is, it's not a ploy. Which is why I also argue against the idea of 12-step programs being cult-like, being a cult or a religion. If you wanted to call it a religion, you could say it's similar to Buddhism as a non-theistic, you know, it's kind of in a similar vein, actually. Although the 12-step program is actually steps that you've got to follow, and Buddhism is more like principles and suggestions. Buddhism doesn't go, this is what you need to do, which is why it's cool. And you know that the 12-step program isn't a cult, because there's no phases. Nobody's making all the money. Nobody's making money. Which is one of the downsides of the 12-step program, is that it's not a cult or religion. So there's no evolution. So there's no progress that can be made, because there's nobody at the top going, okay, now, from now on, we're no longer going to keep bringing up God or whatever. Like, there's nobody making any decisions. And there's no, like, there's no amendments. There's no amendments to the 12 steps or to the book going, hey, can't we do this in 9 steps? I'd like to be able to count all the steps on two hands. Can we do that? Can we change something? No? Fine. 12. But, and that's the thing, is that without, when you don't have somebody in the top making the decisions, I mean, so that's the downside. The upside is there's never anybody in charge of the 12-step program going, okay, we moved to phase two. Now I get to bang all your wives. So there's never that kind of part of the occult in the 12-step program. And that's the good thing. So, but I would recommend, like, if, you know, it's interesting. I would suggest maybe taking a look at that, you know, because it's YouTube. And rather than watch another video that teaches you nothing, and then watch another explanation by somebody you haven't watched tell you the same murder story that you've already seen explained by three other YouTubers and also Dateline, maybe take the time to see if Demi Lovato's YouTube series is any good. I might check it out. To be honest, I got to be in the mood. Much like you probably need to be in the mood. Like, I'd like to feel really bad for her. no, but maybe, I don't know. It might be worth, some interesting perspective, a different perspective. You know, different perspectives are good. You know, you get a little bit of information from everybody and then you make your own mind up and find what works for you. Interesting. But yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to comment about, how I wanted to just do a quick explanation and clearly all my opinion about, are you truly powerless? No. But it's like, yes, I'm powerless. Let's move on to step two. I don't know. It's something you have to convince yourself. You know, I am currently at this time in the moment powerless against drugs and alcohol. Let's move on to step two. Anyway, once again, not disparaging anything. I'm just saying that's kind of how I view it. And it's a lot easier if you can believe it. If you don't believe it, then you got to figure out another way of doing things. And let me just say, from a personal experience, not that fun. And unless you like going to jail. Now, this is my recovery program. How long do you want me to put me away? Half a year? Well, I'm not doing anything. That sounds good. All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for being with me this week. Hang in there. Have a good week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your friends. Take care of your family. Look out for one another and, try to have some fun. Don't read so much news. That's a big one. All right, guys. This is the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast. I'm John Raven. Later. Fight for the piercing skin. Come back down to earth again. Creeping deep inside. Disconnect the telephone line. Gotta get away, gotta get away, get away, gotta get away. For the Lord, don't make a mistake.